What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca here by my side. And we have a pretty fun show today because, A, we had a pretty enjoyable Dynamite. And I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the Dynamites that we like, we don't take as many notes as the Dynamites that we have some problems with. So, like, I took notes because I got to go through everything. But I was like, oh, we didn't need to really have an issue with a lot of stuff, which was different from last week, but I like these Dynamites. And because I interviewed a college football writer from The Athletic named Chris Vanini, who has a wrestling podcast, and I was kind of teasing him because when I used to work for KMBR, this is over 25 years ago now, I would have never told anybody at the radio station that I watched professional wrestling. And this guy has a public podcast. So I was joking with him because obviously it's 20 some odd years later, but, and he's a little bit younger, but, I thought that was funny. Just the, you know, this guy's legit journalist and he's also into the pro wrestling. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, so that we'll leave that for the tail end. The last 30 minutes of the show will be Chris and myself. I recorded it earlier today. And we also talk about a little bit about college football. So if you're a sports fan, I mean, this guy's legit. If you're a college football fan, you know who this is. But we talked a little bit about Deion Sanders, primetime, college football's hottest coach right now. Talked a little bit about his writing on Roman Reigns when he played in college. And Bray Wyatt as well. He wrote some stuff on him when Bray was in college. So he keeps both of the things that he covers. He keeps them pretty close and he uses them to play off of each other. But before we get to that interview, we are going to review Dynamite, but I want to talk first about the call that Tony did today. Now, I didn't hear it. I've actually never been a part of any of the calls because they're usually during work time. But you know, Josh Nason on this very website does a fantastic job of recapping these things. First, he'll tweet out all the good parts, and then he writes one or two pieces on the website about the call. So I'm going to use his prose here in talking about this. But man, like this William Regal situation, it was a much bigger deal to Tony Khan than we realized. Tony Khan in this call mentioned that the decision behind allowing Regal to leave and to get out of his contract is really close to his heart because he's having his family, his mother had a couple of strokes and she had to have surgery. And he just decided, you know, how can I keep a guy from his kid who is at the other company? And obviously he has close friends there. And so that was a big part of why he let Regal out of his contract. And he's even going to let him out earlier than the full year. I think Tony said he'll be under contract until the end of this year. Mm-hmm. And if you watch Dynamite tonight, they did not kill him off. He was not Eric Young. He didn't get murdered on TV. So he is still
is that the most recent murder on Impact Wrestling. Okay, yes. I've been hearing that lately.
So yeah, he's still a part of the story right now. Though I did find it interesting because he's basically telling the media that Regal is done. He's still on the television, at least in video form. He was tonight, and they did not wrap up the storyline tonight. So we still got a few more weeks of whatever happens with William Regal. But what do you think of that whole thing? Like that it was not what I expected. I say no, just you know, Tony's explanation of why and you know what the reason was behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it all kind of fell together for Regal, at least. You know, I mean, So first of all, you know, wishing recovery to speedy recovery to Tony Khan's mom. You know,
after
two strokes and tough situation. You know, Regal, I think we mentioned, you know, he's getting older. He's older, has a lot of issues, medical issues himself, and we can kind of see, like, you know, his son's there, and you know, makes sense that he would want to go back. And at the same time, when he brought this to Tony's attention, I don't know if he even knew anything about Tony's mom or anything like that, but just kind of fate, I guess, for both sides. And then, Tony just had that moment of like, hey, you know, sometimes there's more things important than wrestling, right? That's family.
Life is short. It seems to be the deciding factor here.
Yeah, so,
you know, I have been a little critical of Tony Khan, I would say, in about the last year. And so I'll give a little bit of credence to what I'm talking about. When Dave and I first interviewed Tony Khan in 2019, Dave and I came back from that interview going like, oh my God, that was really bad. And it was bad because I think Tony was a little nervous, but also he couldn't tell us anything. Like, we had all these questions and like we had to ask them. And I don't even know why he agreed to do the interview. But from then on, I found him to be very human, very personable, very unlike corporate speak like you hear from WWE. But over the last year, as their success grew and grew and grew, and they got Punk and all of those things, he himself kind of went a little corporate with his speak. Didn't want to foreshadow anything. Didn't want to really give out too many nuggets about what's going on. Did a lot of no commenting, which I thought was, if you're gonna do these public press conferences, man, you got to do a little bit better than no comment. But today was the first time that I really saw him go back to the Tony that I think a lot of the fans just decided, oh, wrestling can also be this. This person is like a real person. He's not the Vince and what you get out of Vince. And so I just thought it was the best one that he's done in a while. And it was very brave of him to have that conversation and to talk about it. But there's one part of this, and I talked about this with Andrew Zarian last night. I want to get your thoughts on this. So now that we know what happened, I was telling Andrew yesterday, I said, you know, some of this is, I believe, is Tony's got to save face a little bit because of what Triple H tweeted out before Survivor Series, which seemed to be, in hindsight, a little bit of a ha ha ha, we got him kind of thing. Which, if you think about what Tony just went through, now I don't know what Triple H knew about Tony's mom or any of that stuff. I would imagine that, you know, he probably heard something about it, but that ha ha moment is a lot more callous now than sort of the practical joke that it seemed like a few weeks ago. But I did think that Tony needed the reason to do this interview or to do this question and answer was to say, here's the reason we're not just disorganized and just letting people go left and right. There is a reason.
Yeah.
And he needed to tell his fans to sort of save face a little bit.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. You know, I'm sure, you know, you can't knock the guy for letting Rigo out because for what he said. So
yeah,
definitely. But I don't think it's still looking back. I don't think that tweet by Triple H was callous. I just think it's just all fun and games. You know, it's still a bit of a wrestling war and still some gamesmanship. And AEW has said some things on their own too in the past. So it's all just,
But he's doing WWE a favor and Regal a favor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he could have had this guy locked up for the next couple years or next 3 years, probably. But he's doing them a favor by letting him out. So Triple H is part of this calculus. William Regal and Triple H are really good friends. That's also part of the family aspect of it. And for Tony to be like, okay, you know, maybe at that point something was up with Triple H. Maybe he read something. Who knows? But I just think in hindsight, it's like, man, it would make me as Tony Khan not want to do Triple H any more favors. Like, he's like, I'm just doing you this giant favor and William Regal this giant favor.
It also could have been as simple as WWE War Games era is pretty much synonymous with Regal coming out and going War Games, you know, like, that's one of his best friends. And he's like, it's not not the same without this. And they just tweeted it out. So that could have been that too as well. But it's going to be interesting to Regal back in WWE. I think it's going to be a good thing for the PC. It's also interesting how, like, you know, what what information he has. How close was he to? Yeah. Oh, excuse me. That's the heartbreak kid, Dave Rubio, again, chiming in.
doing another run.
Sorry about that.
That's gonna be that's gonna be like the 10:20. Like you'll know we're recording. Rubio tweets.
I'm curious to know, like, obviously he was in the locker room, so he's gonna know a lot of the guys that he hasn't really, you know, been around, at least in the locker room, who wants it more, who he sees as someone, you know, that, hey, when they come available,
yes,
we should go after this guy, right? And it could be someone that we're not even thinking about. It could be someone that's been hidden on dark, you know, and just hasn't been even taken advantage of. Maybe Regal's
wait. Or her. Are you saying Cole Carter is going to be back on the radar?
No, I think Cole Carter can stay over there after. I try to watch Rampage again. Yeah, usually it's like during the afternoon. I'm at home with the kids, and you know, I'm waiting for the Niner game to start. I'm like, yeah, killing an hour. I'll just throw this Rampage on. You know, I don't really pay attention too much, but I just can't even do that. I can't even like half watch it. I have to just turn it off. But
we'll the good thing about that show was there was actual news coming out of it. Like, we learned some matches for the ROH pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. They actually tied some loose ends on Dynamite. Like, this main event for this show tonight that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
The whole build, like the main part of the angle was on Rampage. So I kind of like that, because it's like you go from Dynamite, you watch mm-hmm. Rampage, and then you got to go back to Dynamite to watch the match. This is kind of the stuff that we've been saying that they should do a little bit more, is tie the shows together. I thought they did a good job with that. They're good. And they did it again for Friday, which we'll talk about here as well.
Well, too bad no one watched it then.
Well, I mean, the main event was
who was
Orange
it?
Cassidy Q- and Q- oh, yeah. Marshall.
Yeah. No one's going to watch that crap.
No. And as if the Lumberjack match wasn't already a joke, they tried so hard to make it even more of a joke than it already is.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, they had axes with them, and they said, "Oh, Mark, we can't use these axes in the match." And he's like, "No." That was the interview piece of it. So basically, going back to what you said. That is the most important and underreported thing about this entire William Regal situation. He had, from April until now, he's on the road with these guys, he's in the locker room with these guys. He's a talent scout, essentially, as his job. And I'm sure he's got opinions on certain folks. So
I'm sure without not saying, hey, let me know how long is your contract? Like, straight up, kind of like just shooting the shit, you know, talking the back and forth. Like, you know, like we talk to some young kid and be like, or say Ricky Starks, something like that, right? Like, you know, and maybe Ricky Starks aired out some frustration, right? And he'd be like, well, you know, how long's your contract going? I got 2 more years. Well, you know, for that 2 years, you really have to, you know, just stick with it, you know, but he's like, jotting it down, you know, like a note, you know, in his iPhone on the notepad, you know, like, okay, Starks has 2 more years left, and you can kind of, you know, shoot that information. So it's gonna be interesting. To see how that all plays out. You know, Cody knows a lot of stuff too, right? Cody came from there.
Yep.
Now Regal, so more to come.
Yep, absolutely. Just a couple of other notes that came out of Tony's call. And again, I'm cribbing from Josh Nason's write-up of the call. He said the future of ROH would be addressed Saturday, and alluded to something being revealed about a weekly TV product after Final Battle. I know Paul Fontaine thinks Honor Club is coming back because they may not have anything locked up. If that was a short-term solution, I think I'd be fine with that. But man, you know, you got a few places in the WBD universe that maybe you could get ROH on, and that's what I would be fighting. I wouldn't mess with this Honor Club stuff.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't pay for that show. You know, like, what's that going to be? You know, really? So
He also said that there would be less ROH TV on AEW TV following this week. So I don't know what that says about the future of ROH pay-per-views. I guess
it sounds like he has something cooking. Either, like you said, the streaming service on our club, or maybe hopefully as they're hoping for, somewhere else than that.
Yeah. And he also said he said he's revamping Rampage.
Yeah, again.
He hinted at the New Japan relationship, but also said something to Ask Saturday. And
guessing said, a surprise or search from a New Japan representative. Yeah.
I mean, there could be something, you know, there is Wrestle Kingdom coming up, obviously.
True.
And he also said, yeah, he had a lot to say about FTR. So it seemed to be hinted at that FTR was still, you know, still has big plans for these guys. So, but yeah, it's a good call. I really liked it. And I think when he is this version of Tony Khan, he really opens up to this fan base, and that's what they, yeah, you know, that's what they like. They like that of him. And I think it's pretty good too. All right. Let's talk about this, this Dynamite show. The one weird thing to me is right after this call, then we still see that William Regal is involved in a storyline. Immediately, Excalibur says that William Regal is still in the hospital. Not only is he still in the hospital, Daniel Bryan is still in the hospital with him. Has not left his side.
He's there till December 31st, right? So yeah, I hear he gets out at the hospital on December 31st.
But where's Daniel Bryan going to go?
Goes back to AEW. He said, "Ah, damn."
Bryan Danielson, sorry.
Oh, Bryan Danielson.
I'm still screwing that up over a year later.
Yeah, but it does make sense. I mean, it makes logical sense that he would be by his side, you know, and wouldn't it be nice to get like some up. See the promo they did earlier. Like, wouldn't it be nice to maybe get an update from Regal, or maybe like an update from Bryan at the hospital. Maybe like not show Regal in bed or with the tubes in his mouth or anything like that, but like just kind of like Bryan coming out of the hospital room and talking to Renee, who's there on the spot. Not Alex Marvez, because who knows what happened with him, but I would say have Renee out there, you know, trying to get an interview with Bryan Danielson there.
She wasn't on the show today, huh?
No, she wasn't.
Yeah, that is a major error in this thing. And we mentioned it last week. I mentioned it with Dave too. I was like, I would have loved to get an update on Regal by the end of that show. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't in the cards. It's not really in their cards when it comes to the storytelling.
Did they update anything on Rampage? Did you see?
No, they did not.
Just highlight or something, maybe, possibly.
Yeah. I don't even know. I can't remember. But they did not like say, oh, you know, he's doing better or he's doing worse or whatever. Like that. It's seemingly not what they do with this stuff. So
they need to stop showing the highlight of actually MJF missing him with the nuts. they showed it on the commercial leading into Dynamite tonight, but they did not show it during the video package, which I'd like. But like leading into it, you just see, you know, MJF completely missing him and stuff. But you know, whatever.
All right, so the show started with the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal.
Bunch of job guys.
Not a good match. Yeah. I didn't realize this was a mid-card battle royal. Like, I thought, and you know what? I don't remember the other ones. I don't remember who was in them. We may have had the same argument last year.
It was basically like, there's no Kingston. Shouldn't Wardlow be in this? He doesn't have to win it. He can get, you know, eliminated. You could do a lot of stuff out of a battle royal with a lot of different programs and stuff, you know, kind of, you know, leading into eliminations. I think there's only three people that got entrances. Ricky Starks, Jungle Boy, Jack. Justin. I love you. I love Jack Perry. He's such a good kid. But man, dude, show some damn fire. He just came like, hey, you know, like, oh, I gotta go there. Okay, you know, like, like he just needs to, like, come on, like the people are, well, you know, doing the whole song, they're dancing, yeah. Like, fucking fire up, man, get him in. And he just kind of just walks out. It's like, oh, it drives me insane. And of course, Dustin got a entrance, but like, you know, I think, well, shouldn't Ethan Page got an entrance? He didn't get no one. He was out there with just that just at the on the floor waiting.
I counted Orange Cassidy, Ricky Starks, Jungle Boy as folks who are above the mid card, and Ethan Page kind of maybe slightly above the mid card. They're doing something with him.
Yeah.
He was in at the end. He was bossing Matt Hardy around. But yeah, that was it. Everything else was folks that you would see in the background on stuff and not rarely ever wrestling on these shows, right?
Doesn't Matt Hardy just look like the crazy uncle that still wears like Van Halen shirts and, you know?
I don't get
it. A little bit burnt out, you know? Like, come on, Uncle Pete. Like, come on, dude. Like, what are you doing?
I don't get it. Like I said, this guy was a real star in his career, and he's just playing second fiddle.
If you plan on bringing Jeff back, I say just leave Matt off TV till you do, then kind of have him, you know, try to do it again. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Brian Cage was also in this match, and there was an unfortunate spot in this match where Jungle Boy drop kicked him or something, and he was kind of close to the ropes, and he was supposed to go over the rope, but he kind of bonked into the rope and then had to jump over the top rope.
That
wasn't great. Jack did an awesome Hurricane Rana on Lee Moriarty that tossed Lee Moriarty out. But then W. Morrissey,
Big Bill
got Jack Perry out. But why are there seconds allowed in a battle royal? Like what? Like you had Dalton Castle's boys out there. You had Big Bill out there. You had Stokely out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a battle royal where the idea is to throw the person over the top rope, shouldn't like managers or and Morrissey's not even a manager. He's just like a giant wrestler who should have been in the match.
Well, it's just like the Royal Rumble. Started off with no manager allowed. They come to the ringside and say, okay, they go to the back.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're out there. All the managers are out there. Yeah. So maybe it's just that's what's going on.
What do you think about the bump that Jack took with Morrissey choke slamming him?
Stupid, unnecessary. I mean, they could have just whipped the man, give him a boot on the floor, and that's it. You know, like, why risk it? It looked like the way he took it was more on his right shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. But the camera angle made it look like but it's still very close. It can happen, you know, in this.
So if you didn't see the show, Morrissey picked up Jack and he tossed him.
Choke slam
against the corner of the apron, and the way that Jack hit it was like supposed to be like on his upper shoulder, and his head whiplashed back, and so it looked brutal. I was like, man.
Plus, he has that long hair, so the visual, the hair, like, you know, slapping back. I don't know why he just didn't like pick him up, and if you're gonna do that, like, just let him land flat on the apron, you know, like. But they're like, oh no, everyone does that. Let's do something where he can nearly kill me and be paralyzed me.
We had a whole match about this in the next match. So it was ridiculous. It was crazy. All right. Of all people, the great Sean Dean made the final four.
Well, because he's 2-0 against MJ.
Ricky Starks threw out Matt Hardy. It was a 2-on-1 with Matt Hardy and Ethan Page, and Ethan Page just starts bossing Matt around, and Starks throws him out. Now, the idea was that Page thought, oh, Matt Hardy's got this, so he's kind of looking at the crowd. And instead, when Starks throws him out, he's supposed to then turn around and be so surprised. The problem is he turned around too early and he saw Starks throw Matt Hardy out. So they kind of ruined that, you know, that visual of what it was supposed to be. They did the Rock Big Show finish as Paige tried to power slam him over the top rope. But Ricky hung on and Paige is the one who went over, and they wasted no time because MJF's music immediately played. He comes out. And they cut promos on each other. Now, before I even get into the context of these promos, there has been a criticism recently of MJF going after the low-hanging fruit, going for the cheap heat. Are you somebody who thinks that he does this a little too often?
I don't mind that when he does it, it's more colorful and interesting than like a lot of the guys. So I don't mind him doing it. The lot of like shut up to the crowd stuff over and over, like you kind of don't need to do that like three or four times during the promo. But you know, other than that, I don't mind it. But I thought he was really good here, and I was kind of concerned because I'm like, God, he just, you know, just verbally just destroying Ricky. I'm glad that, you know, Ricky got his revenge, at least on the mic. But I kind of wish, like, did we have to do a stupid battle royal to get to this? We could have just done something else, right?
Well, it's a yearly thing.
Well, could have waited next year, you know? Next week or a week before, we could have done something. I don't even think Ricky Starks needed to be in this match. I think it's ridiculous. Now he's going for, what was it? So now he's challenged for the ring and the title next week? Is that what it is?
I was waiting to hear if that was the case, but they may have said it, but I didn't hear it. Maybe it is for both of them. It would be logical that it's now for both of them, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought they said.
So MJF said that Ricky was talented, but then in like the very next sentence called him the drizzling shits. Then he called him a dollar store, Dwayne Johnson, and it said he's not the rock, he's the pebble. And so then I thought, man, what does that make LA Knight? Jeez.
He's a good worker.
he took a shot at YouTube, man. He took a shot at the NWA and the YouTube show. And yeah. I was like, did somebody not tell Max that AEW has two YouTube shows?
Yeah, but they have a prime. They have a show on TNT. And
sure,
TBS,
sure. So I know. A lot of the fan base watches those shows. They were like, "Hey, man." Well, I guess he is doing it to maybe go after them.
Yeah.
So then Starks got his shot. Called him Maxi Pad. Talked about the low hanging fruit. Says it's running dry. Starks said it much better than me, but essentially said that MJF smelled, he can't dress, he can't iron his clothes, and he takes steroids. That's what I sort of got out of these criticisms.
I missed the steroid line.
Well, he said something about his back. Your back looks like it's been thrown on tax, or he said something like that.
That's okay. I don't mind him getting a little personal about stuff. You know, makes for good promo, you know?
He also said he called out MJF's fake babyface turn as if to say, you know, you kind of got a little scared to become a baby face. And so you went with what comes naturally to you. And he said, And he's just like, I'm the one to take the title. I deserve it. You don't. I want the responsibility. MJF kicked him low, but he made a comeback. I thought it was a star making promo for Ricky. Mm. But like we say, every single time it's about the follow up. Like you get that moment.
Yeah.
And then you get the follow-up, and the follow-up is often not as good or cannot capitalize. He's got to lose this match, I'm assuming. But you would think that this promo puts him higher up on that ladder for the future. Mm-hmm. At least it should.
It should. I mean, but I bet you anything, after next week, Starks will be just maybe not on the next show, or he should be back right away winning again. That's what I would do, you know, after that match with MJF next week. I thought his promo was really good. The text I got from Heartbreak Kid David Ruby was Ricky was nervous, but what a moment for him with Max. So
I guess his mom may have been in the front row.
She was in front row. I didn't like the low blow and then coming back with the spear stuff. I think there could have been, like I said, I think they had a good idea, but I wish the execution was better. I wish like you could have had this face off promo between each other. And then later when Ricky has a match, Max would try to take advantage and kick him low. But, you know, Ricky's a little smarter, catches him, goes for the spear. Maybe MJF bails out, you know, or something, like before it gets hit. Just I don't know. I didn't like the whole low blow spear stuff, but I mean the crowd there liked it a lot, and the promo was really good. So I like this other than that those two little things, and plus the way we wasted like what 16 minutes on a battle royal that we didn't need to watch.
Yeah, the battle royal was quite the setup for this thing. Yeah, it's like. Yeah. I was like, man, I can't wait for this battle royale to be over. And then I was happy that
I mean, we could have had a rematch with what Ethan Page and Starks again or something, you know, instead of doing this battle royal thing. And like I said, like this battle royal would have made sense maybe like after the pay per view, maybe because after MJF won the title, he didn't need the ring anymore or the title of the ring, I guess. So I don't know.
Okay, so then we had a Joe and Darby video package, and then we got the Moxley interview. What is John Moxley going to say? Well, the thing that we wanted him to say was pretty short. He mentioned Paige. He's like, hey, man, I like this Adam Page. I like the guy who just wants to fight. He doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to just do the talking. He lets his fist do the talking. Said, this is wrestling, this is combat, this is the sport of kings. And then he kind of changed, and this was a theme to Moxley tonight, which was, it's almost like he is sort of replacing Regal in the Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah.
He's pushing Friday, because he's going to be on Rampage, and he's pushing Saturday as like, this is the moment for the Blackpool Combat Club to kind of get rid of the Jericho Appreciation Society and then move on from there.
Yeah.
And he says, Hangman, you want a piece, you know where to find me. And today was John Moxley's birthday. So happy birthday to John.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't really into this promo. Like, after what we saw last week, first thing we hear from his mouth is like, you know, glad you stepped up and I respect you. They just wanted to kill each other last week, you know. No promo from Hangman Page though. Like, what that was missing, I think that was needed, right? Like some motivation why he wanted to, you know, go after Moxley. Because I mean, I know people are saying, well, he got knocked out, but he got knocked out in a match, and the guy who knocked him out was also concerned for his livelihood. You know? And,
yeah,
you know, and so I just don't understand all that.
Okay, so I think
Moxley wants to get past this weekend and on to something else. I think
the key line was Moxley saying, you know, this is all elite wrestling, not all elite talking. So spoiler alert for you folks who are going to watch Rampage, Adam Page makes an appearance on Rampage, though from what I've read, he doesn't actually cut the promo, which I agreed with you. I think he needs to say it. I know a lot of people were mad at poor Lance Storm for saying that he didn't like the storyline and he didn't think that they, you know, went over it. And Excalibur's explanation wasn't enough for why Hangman is so mad at Moxley, all those things.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Lance on that one for sure.
You want to get on Lance's side, that means you're gonna get some nasty tweets, man. People are going crazy over this stuff. Like,
really?
To the point of where I'm just like, I can't believe we are all part of like this same wrestling fandom. Like, to be so you know, and here's what it is. AEW is in second place, right? So the fan base so badly wants to defend things that they think are okay because it's different than WWE. And when you want, and we've said this before on this show, one of the things WWE does really well is they lay it out for you. So you don't have the question of what you know, what's the reason here? Well, WWE probably hits you over the head with it, you know, more often than you need to. And AEW kind of leaves it ambiguous. And I think in some instances it's good. In some instances, it's not great, but there were so many people who were so pissed at Lance because I think they also know Lance is kind of fed up with AEW. He's not a fan of watching the TV. So that makes him a little bit of public enemy number one. But it's like, the guy has an opinion and he is in wrestling. And so thus, like, I'm going to hear it. And now, whether I agree with it or not, but it is something that we talked about last week, which was, oh, they're doing this. And it's kind of an interesting way, not the way that I would necessarily do it. But really, it's just about, it seemed that the crux of the argument seems to be about, oh, if you were in Hangman's shoes, this is exactly what you would do. But I was saying, I was trying to explain that because it is in pro wrestling, that is actually hazy because it in the storyline of the match, he gets knocked out. And that's just like someone hitting their finisher and him being knocked out. What's the difference? Why should we make this time where he got knocked out legit in the storyline? All of a sudden Mox is this bad person for doing that.
And plus, like, in a promotion that right now needs babyface challengers for MJF, why would you put these two babyfaces against each other right now? Like, I think you should have Hangman Page, like, kind of explain what happened, his recovery after the knockout, what he went through with concussions, how that affected him, and then he talks about the road back to the top, you know, and then we see him back on television. We see him back, not necessarily in a feud, but like he should be winning matches. And now we kind of have him getting ready for MJF somewhere down the line instead of, so I think it kind of like doesn't, other than just like they wanted to, like Tony wanted something surprise, you know?
Yeah. Obviously.
That's all it was. Like, but he's not thinking long term with it, right? It's such a hot shot thing. It mocks. And then so who's gonna win this match? You have Paige coming back, right? Does he need another loss after been losing for a while? Like you need to get him going again. Mox just lost a title. I don't think he wants to be losing again. So you know, like I don't know. I would have kept them separate, and you know, Hangman can mention like I want another shot with Moxley. Down, you know, work my way up. I got to work my way back with the ranks, and Moxley obviously is on top of that list. You know, as a top contender, we'll meet again, and I promise you, it's going to be a different outcome or something like that. Yeah.
Well, the other part of it is, if you're in John Moxley's shoes, this guy comes back. And he gets in your ring, interrupts your promo, and then he immediately puts his face right in your face.
Yeah.
So, of course, Moxley's going to be like, well, what the F, dude? And he, you know, that was like fighting mode for him. So it's not like, oh, the reason why Hangman came out is because Moxley made fun of his concussion. No. Hangman had decided before he was going to fight.
Yeah.
Before Mox even mentioned that. So that's the other part of this that I think people are trying to use but who cares? The amount of discourse I saw about this over the last couple of days was ridiculous. Lance talked for like 30 seconds and it created like 2 days worth of content. I was just like, what's going on?
Yeah. Like stupid. That sucks. I mean, I know Lance doesn't care about the, you know,
I mean, he may care a little bit, but ultimately, like
I mean, come on, people, like he's just sharing his opinion. And if it's not, that's the problem with people. Like they don't want to hear, you know, they want to hear like just to have everything's good in there. Everything's perfect. Not everything's perfect.
And
you know,
to me, and this is just my opinion. This is not John's opinion. This is not the website's opinion. It's because people are AEW fans. And they so badly want it to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what you do as a fan, right? Like our San Francisco Giants, we didn't get Aaron Judge, but we hope that we get somebody else. And it's not like we're going to be like, no, we're not fans anymore.
Well, you did tweet out he's dead to you.
Oh, yeah, he's dead to me. Absolutely. Aaron Judge is dead to me.
You know this because you know me personally, of course. I'm a huge Star Wars geek. I love the prequels, but I also would recognize they're not great movies, but I love them, right?
Yeah.
So you could be a fan of AEW and love it, but then you can also, when something's bad, it's just bad, you know? Like, not everything in wrestling in the past was great. You know, there's stupid stuff we recognize.
To give folks a little bit of backup here, a lot of it is also when you're a fan of something and in the wrestling discourse, the competitive aspect of it is to go, oh, this isn't good. And WWE would do this, and this is why it's good. So you're immediately on the defensive, and you're like, yeah, you have to defend what you really enjoy. And I get that part of it. That is so human. I just think we need to kind of control ourselves and pick fights and not take things way out of context. It was pretty ridiculous.
I agree.
Okay, so we had a car crash match, if I ever saw one. Samoa Joe and Darby Allin. Now, I'm not saying it was bad, because I was paying so much attention to this because I was scared for Darby's life. That's how. Now, I imagine some of these things were really dangerous, but they also played up the danger. Joe's a dangerous guy, and Darby, you know, knows how to take these bumps. At least I hope. But man, what is that?
Tomorrow's my daughter's Kaylee's third birthday. We have the I'm in the kitchen area. If everyone wants to know, but Tiana just fell on me. Well, we're on camera, so I can show Tiana. Yeah. Little decoration fell on me, so it's very Disney princess theme, because she's a big Disney princess fan. So
Kaylee, how is she three? That's ridiculous.
Sneaks up on you, man. I was just telling her, like, Chloe's going to be eight next year, and it's 8 more years after that, she's going to be driving. That's scary.
Okay. So one of the first spots in this match is Darby's doing his somersault dive out of the ring, where he just blasts the other guy. And this is when Joe just decided to move out of the way. And this dude crashed and burned into the barricade. And I was just like, you could not pay me to do something like that. Like, oh my God, ridiculous. Then Joe started swinging him into the barricade and the side of the apron. Mm-hmm. There was a count out tease with the doctor out there with Darby, but Darby valiantly babyface made it back in the ring. He started to get a little bit on Joe, does a coffin drop to the outside on Joe, code red for a really good near fall. Mm-hmm. This dude bit Joe right in the face, and the referee was like, eh. And then the finish was he does the coffin drop onto Joe, but as we know, Joe's move is the coquina clutch, or the rear naked choke, or whatever you want to call it. So Darby falls right in a rear naked choke. He does not tap out. Taz made it apparent or told everybody that, you know, he's too stubborn to tap out, so he went to sleep instead.
Yeah.
And then here's what I liked. You know how, like, in some UFC fights, rear naked choke puts the guy out, and then the other guy, you know, he puts his hands up and he's walking over to the cage, to the crowd. And then the guy wakes up immediately and he grabs the ref's foot, like the ref is like, he's still in the fight, because he doesn't realize, like, he's out of it. So Darby jumps up as if he's still in the match. And then Joe just immediately headbutts this dude, and he goes out again, puts him in, gives him a muscle buster on the wheels of Darby's skateboard, which looks so rough.
Yeah.
And then he choked him out again before Wardlow came in for the save. And it was the quickest save you ever saw. Wardlow comes in, saves him, and then go to commercial, never see Wardlow ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like this match. I thought it was a really good match, even though Darby, you know, that's his calling card, I guess. Takes these wild bumps. He's, you know, this era's Cactus Jack, but
goodness.
Cactus Jack was 60 80, pounds?
About more. Got to hit
more. And has so much more cushion when he fell. And Darby's just this little stick, you know, like, and look at Mick Foley's been talking about his issues now, you know, even more. How things are really affecting him, and it's scary stuff. But take away all the danger, which made it match, added a lot to the match, a lot of draw in the match, though it did. I thought this was a really good match. I just didn't like the post-match stuff, you know. Darby standing up, like, saying to him, like, I'm still standing, and he gets his ass kicked anyway. He would just be down, and you know, instead of beating up Darby there, maybe Joe could have, you know, grabbed the mic and just said, you know, like, I'm going to do that to Juice Robinson at the pay-per-view this, you know, this Saturday.
I thought Juice was going to come out to save Darby, but it was Wardlow.
And then, you know, and I'm done with Juice, I'm going to smash you, Wardlow, one more time. And then, you know, as he's walking up, like, you know, like, the two belts. Here comes Wardlow face to face, and then maybe we can have all the security and everyone can kind of jump in and kind of do another. But they just did a pull apart last week, I know. But
there was another one on Raw this week, between Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley. When they did theirs, I was like, oh my gosh, we've seen so many pull aparts in wrestling of late.
Yeah, I know. It's everything's just so overdone now, but. You know, it's just something else. Like, why beat up Darby and do all that? And dude, bro, why do you need to get muscle bustered on the wheels of the skateboard? Do you want a herniated disc in your back? Like, is that what you're asking for? Dude, like I don't understand.
Again, another thing that I would never do, no matter how much anybody paid me. So
and look it, next by tomorrow, we're not gonna even remember that.
Well, right? I don't know. It's going to be in my mind because that was, like I said, my eyes were open on this match. I was just like scared for this guy.
The whirly bird off the post. That was cool. I thought, but the cannonball bump on the floor and then dude, Darby's nuts. I love Darby though. I wish he was doing more. I wish he was doing more though. I know he's just challenged with the TNT top. You know what I mean? Like, I just wish he should have been featured more, at least last year or so, I thought.
Yeah. Okay, so the next thing actually was Orange Cassidy and Kip Sabian were doing an interview, and Orange Cassidy's just like, hey man, I'm here. You want the match? Let's do the match. And Kip says, oh yeah, you're going to ask me when I'm hurt. And then he's like, well then, go find someone who can fight me. And so Kip's going to find somebody who's going to face Orange Cassidy on Rampage. And then, it was just his non-excitement, I guess, for whatever he's going to do on Rampage, which everybody tells me is the gimmick, and I understand, but it doesn't really make me excited to watch the match.
Yeah, and the person that Kip gets...
Okay.
Not gonna
either. We'll spoil it, but we'll give people fast forward 30 seconds here because we're going to give the spoiler. We're going to give the person who Orange Cassidy is facing at Rampage. Spoilers are all over the internet, by the way. So this is not just us spoiling that person. What did you think of that person? One Trent Seven.
Oh, I thought it was Trent Beretta.
No, it's Trent Seven.
I saw Trent. I thought, why is he wrestling his damn partner? So Trent Seven came in.
Seven came in.
All right. Well, that's good. It was a good talent. We'll see.
Okay, but then how? I mean, is this a real? Like, are we going to see Trent Seven as All Elite? Is this you think it's a tryout? What do you think?
I think it's like Damo coming in and losing that one match to Wardlow.
And he did go. He did go under the name of Trent Seven. He had his own.
That's his name. Yeah.
He had his own little video on the screen when he came out. So they did prepare something for him.
I can see. I can see Trent. I think this being a one deal. One and done probably. Maybe I think a couple things on Dark or Elevation or something.
They are going to the UK at some point.
True. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. A video package with Chris Jericho saying, isn't it ironic that I wanted to destroy ROH and then I became the best ROH champion of all time, setting up his match this weekend against Claudio. We had Claudio Wheeler Yuta against Hager and Daniel Garcia. Moxley was in the babyfaces corner. Sammy Guevara's in the heels corner. This was a very ho-hum match to me. It was very meandering. Like, it was almost like one of those matches where it just existed because they needed to eat time on the show at this point. Nothing happened before the commercial break. The big spot was the giant swing on Hager. But then there was multiple double team spots where the ref was just like, what do you guys want me to do here? There was
Rick Knox. You think he's really asking?
He just looked helpless in there. Then there was a double submission spot and he was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. But I mean, he knew what to do. But it's just like one of those moments where you're like, man, these poor refs. And then finally, Claudio bonked Hager into Daniel Garcia. And then he hit Hager with the uppercut and pinned him. But this was a match that I was kind of excited to watch. And then when I was watching, I was like, man, they just, for whatever reason, can't get out of second gear.
Well, it also went too long, I think. They went past their peak, and it just kind of ended flat. Like that you know, the uppercut finish was kind of flat, you know, on Hager. And I think they kind of missed their peak. Like when Claudio got the hot tag in, and it was like coming into those forearms, boom, 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 boom. I thought they could have went to the, you know, Sammy getting involved and Moxie getting involved soon after that and start working to the finish. But they kept going and going and going, as you said. This match really also made me realize, too, like, man, Dan Garcia's cooled off, too, himself, right? Like, all that stuff he was doing with Jericho, he's a very big part of the show. I don't think we've ever really seen him too much. He wasn't on the pay-per-view and
He'll get heated up for this match, I'm assuming, especially if he wins. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they have these, like, My turn, your turn. Yeah. And it's, yeah, so many guys.
Yeah. So, I thought it was fine until it lost to me. They went too long with it and stuff. But Sammy out there, he looked like excited to be out there as, you know, yeah, he's just like,
this was Moxley's one.
Yeah. 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 They're both out there for like, they don't want to be out there. You can tell. Like, and then Guevara's like, I'm just here to get my butt kicked by Moxley. I'm trying to interfere. So.
Okay. So then, now, talk about weird. Tony Schiavone's out there to interview the babyfaces. And he says that he's got this video that was recorded after Full Gear. And he was only supposed to show it. Was it if Regal got hurt or if he left or what was the reason?
Well, Regal said, like, if you're only going to show this video, if something happens to me. Something happens to him.
Yeah. So it could be either of those. And so they go back in time to play this video of William Regal from Full Gear. I'm not going to analyze it like the Zapruder tape. I'm not going to see if he's got the same suit from Full Gear and the same tie and the
he's
hair.
He's wearing
the
Blackpool Combat Club shirt.
But anyway, we go back in time to Regal. And basically, Regal says that the Blackpool Combat Club didn't need him anymore, but they didn't want to let him go. So he led by example. Regal said the reason he did what he did was to teach Moxley the final thing he had to teach him, which is to always stay ahead and keep your eyes on the back of your head. He did not mention Danielson at all. This was just about Moxley.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he'll always be Blackpool Combat Club. Now, what I wanted before they went to this interview is, remember in Wayne's World when they do like flashbacks, they do the that's what I wanted. I was like, then show me it's a flashback. That would be silly. And then Tony comes. We're back in real time, and Tony wants to get the reaction from Moxley and Claudio. And Moxley grabs the mic. He's got like an emotional face. Like you could tell he's like trying to figure out what to say. He's kind of fighting his words a little bit. And then he goes, all I know is one thing is for sure, which is the three men here live and breathe for pro wrestling. On Friday, I challenge any wrestler in the world. Blackpool Combat Club are making a serious statement this weekend. So he legit didn't even answer the question. Like he didn't react to the story, to this whole
I'm
thing
telling
at all.
You, he's not into this. He's not into this at all. This is stupid. I think he's probably like, why are we doing this? Regal's been hurt and gone. That's all we need. He screwed me. Why do I have to sell that? This guy's giving me one last lesson. And you know, it was like a love letter to the Blackpool Comic Club by Regal, right? It was like, you know, I did it, but it was all for your good. And you know, that's just stupid. It was like unnecessary, this whole promo.
Okay, here's the stupidest part of all. Okay. William Regal, who said, always stay ahead and keep your eyes in the back of your head.
Yeah.
Gets blasted by MJF in the back of his head.
Yeah.
So thus, he is not good at this himself.
Yes. He's yeah, I know. It's I don't understand. Like, they had this. Who knows why they did this? They thought this was a great idea, but I mean, Mox, you could tell he was not into this. Like, he's even like looking at the video. They show a split screen, and he's just like, he doesn't care. He's just shrugging, and yeah, he's totally not into this. I could just tell. You know, I could tell he'd rather be anywhere else, celebrate his birthday, than this, doing this crap.
But, yeah,
but he had a wrestle with Takeshka later. Well, I guess.
Supposedly, it's a really good match that I got multiple feedbacks from people.
I'm sure it's good. But Takeshka went on this. He was the guy putting on great, really good matches, showing a lot of heart, but losing. He goes back home.
Challenge.
He comes back home. And now he's back to show a lot of heart, have a great match, and lose again. Like, what is this? You should start giving this guy some wins now on television and building him up, right? Like, what? Anyone else could, Mox could be anyone else. Anyone else. There must be some New Japan guy hanging around that he can do a New Japan match with, you know, like, yeah, it's in the area.
Our own Mel Gray had a little back and forth with Takeshita on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Takeshita said, can you tell me what I should buy for my new life in the U.S.? I already bought frozen Cinnabons. So other than that, and then Mel wrote back and said, I feel like Carl Fredericks would back me up here. Buy an air fryer. I bet it would perfectly cook a frozen mini Cinnabon. Carl Frederick, also a Star Wars fan, I'm guessing based on this GIF, replied with Mandalorian, the GIF that says, this is the way. And then I guess Takeshita did get the air fryer. At least he took a picture of one, so...
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of the air fryer. You know, I know Shayna Baszler's not a big fan of the air fryer. the oven's an air fryer, I know, but you know, I love my air fryer. My air fryer rocks.
All right, let's move on here. House of Black video package. I guess they're coming back on Wednesday. Jamie Hayter, she was very upset that Renee gave a sit down to Saraya. Mm-hmm. And she's like, hey, Tony Schiavone, how come I don't get one? And so I was expecting her to have like this something to say, you know, just she's got something on her mind. And it was really that, you know, I'm just going to give the winner of Sheeta and the Bunny a match. She didn't say when, but yeah, they're having a match
on Dynamite. I thought it was on Dynamite. I thought
that's what
not.
I assumed. Yeah, that's what I assumed when I was watching. Yeah, yeah. But Sheeta and Bunny face each other on Rampage, and that's going to be the next match for her.
And she's just defending Regina's wave title or something like that. Yeah, what is she defending? Some belt?
I think that's the promotion is wave, I think, isn't it?
I don't know. I heard Regina's waves title. What the hell is Gina's wave title? Is it a surfing championship?
Yeah, I should have asked
Scott.
Scott Edwards. Yeah,
Scott Edwards would know.
Okay, Jade Cargill and the Baddies versus Kira Hogan, Madison Rayne, and Sky Blue. Long-ish match. The whole match was set up for Jade to come in as the big bad here to win the match. And I thought it was funny because so Kira Hogan's in, and Jade is going to give her finisher, and Kira Hogan slips out. And I think she may have hit like one move, but immediately tags out just so Madison Rayne could take the finish and lose the match.
You don't want to be Kira because she just turned babyface out of just blue.
But it was such like it wasn't like a babyface like, yeah, like tag out to Madison Rayne. It was like, oh yeah, because you want to stop getting your ass kicked here, babyface.
I was pretty much started on time, right? As I usually do. There's usually like a moment at the pause to go do something, and I do that to save some time so I can, you know, fast forward Jericho's entrances or Mox's entrances. But unfortunately, I was caught up at this point, and I watched this whole match and picture in picture, and whoo, they got their thank goodness Layla Gray versus Sky Blue was in picture in picture, because that was like, you know, wrestling school beginner class, you know, fumbling around. Like, that's how bad it looked. So. But yeah, the other match that went way too long. It's going to be just one segment and done and got to the point. Like, you know, we'll see how the quarters do, but I'm sure the women don't really do well, you know. So I'm sure there's a little bit of a dip here. Even with Jade.
Yeah. All right. Then Tony with Saraya. This was not a sit down, though. This was a stand up interview. Britt came in. And did you see SmackDown last week, last Friday?
No, it was on FS1. It didn't tape for me.
Yeah. So Kofi Kingston is hanging out, and the Imperium come in and run in on his interview. And he looks at him and he goes, like, something like, "You guys just hanging out here waiting for me? Like, what's going on?" And I was like, "Oh, they're making fun of AEW because it happens all the time."
And then AEW is also making fun of themselves with this, you know, like, "Oh, you know, oh, here she is." And then, you know, yeah.
I thought it was funny. It was funny when Kofi did it, and it was funny here when Britt did it. Britt said, "Congrats on your biggest win ever, but it won't happen again." At that moment, for some reason, I thought Saraya was going to say, you know, that she was a WWE champion at one point, but she didn't say it. I was waiting.
No, I think she abandoned that attack.
I know, but I just thought, like, instinctively, like, she was ready. Yeah. So Britt,
she should have said, "Yeah, I'm never gonna. I beat you once. I'm not gonna wrestle you again. I'm gonna move on to next
section." Who's next? So Britt says that she's got Jamie with her by her side, except for here tonight. Mm.
That could be the
and match. For the forum show, which is a month from now.
Oh, wait, a month from now?
The LA forum show is in January. I think it's a month from now. She wants her and Jamie Hayter versus Saraya and a partner of her choice, the partner of her choice is going to get some people thinking. Is there any surprises out there for who that partner could be?
A lot of people think it's Sasha. Possibly, but I don't think so. I think it's probably gonna be Thunder Rosa.
That's probably it. But just the fact that it's a mystery person, the internet's gonna do some.
But you never know.
Thinking here, yeah,
it could be one of those two, Naomi or Sasha. But I still think they're WWE bound.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with WrestleMania around the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so on Rampage, Orange Cassidy defends against .. We already said it. We won't have to say it again. Sheeta versus the Bunny, Ruby and Tay Mello do an interview together, I guess, even though they hate each other.
It's another face off, probably no physicality, and, you know, talking about catering and stuff like that.
Lee Moriarty and W. Morrissey in action. There's an interview with Athena to set up her match with Mercedes, and Moxley and Takeshita talked about Final Battle. Now, let me read you this lineup.
And I will be previewing Final Battle and NXT TakeOver Deadline, or just Deadline, for my Take Home podcast this week. Look for it on the Fight Game Network.
Saturday morning, it'll be up. So Jericho and Claudio, Dalton Castle and the boys against the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage, Wheeler Yuta versus Daniel Garcia, Samoa Joe versus Juice Robinson, Mercedes Martinez versus Athena, Shane Taylor Promotions versus Swerve in Our Glory, and as we get to the main event, as we know, the main event of that show, I guess it'd be the second to the top. And maybe it is the main event, because it's the match that's selling the show for a lot of people, which is FTR against Dem Boys in a double dog collar match. Okay, read off to you. Is that worthy of $40?
No. No. It's worthy of a three-way split with me and some other guys at the revenge. Or if I can escape that night, because, you know, we got my daughter's birthday party on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, you know, the wife said, "We can't do nothing the night before. You got to bunker down at home for some reason.
You got to be ready, man. You got to be
philosophy.
Ready.
What do you mean? You can't go out? It's the next day. Like, oh, what? Like, oh, marriage. And I'm like, if Big Day's watching, I might sneak over there if I can't sneak over there, but we'll see.
I think it is worth the $40, but I'm also somebody who thinks that Jericho and Claudio is going to be really, really good. I don't like the backwards booking to get to the match necessarily, but as a match, just on its own, I think that match can be good.
And then there's, like, if Claudio loses, he has to join the JS, right?
Yep.
A lot of stipulations of people being, like, you know, contracts bought and
held against their will. You know,
private party's been passed around like a prisoner, prisoner guy in the prison or something. Those guys are going from all these people. And then you have Matt Hardy right now, right? Yeah. He's stuck. And then now you're going to have, I'm guessing that's going to happen to Claudio, right? Unless Claudio wins the title. That's kind of a big, isn't that a big letdown at this point, though? If Claudio wins it from Jericho? It feels like a letdown.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week for Dynamite, match 4 of the Death Triangle and the Elite, House of Black in action, and MJF versus Ricky Starks. All right, let's get to the main event. FTR and the Acclaimed. Max Caster comes out, does a few borderline gay jokes a la 2003 John Cena. Not as bad, maybe. A little bit more subtle, but still kind of bad. And then a Herschel Walker joke, which I pop for.
Yes.
The match was good. I'm not sure if they really clicked 100% together, but I thought they worked really hard. They had some really good near falls. They had kind of people kind of going in that roller coaster of who's going to win. I was kind of like, oh yeah, I'm not exactly sure who's going to win this match based on what's happening. I thought it was pretty darn good match. You know, not the best tag team match I've ever seen, but man, the Acclaimed have come pretty far from where we first saw them, and they were able to, you know, pretty much go toe to toe with the best tag team, you know, depending on it, if you think it's FTR in the business. And then Max does roll up Cash for the win, and I saw Cash on Twitter said, you know, this is my fault. I lost the match. My bad. But good main event. They had those fans going, man. Live in the crowd, they were going with each near fall.
Yeah, the two most over tag teams in the company right now, and you know, the claims limitations, you know, they're are hidden by the overall popularity for them right now.
Yeah,
Max Caster.
Dave said they're the hottest merch act in AEW.
Oh, I definitely believe it. Max Caster, man, needs to open up when he's getting chopped. He does not like getting chopped by those guys. But overall, I like the match. And we'll talk about what happened after this. But I think I would have liked to see FTR have more of an out, you know, though they did get caught instead of beaten, like, you know, flat with the finish. But I maybe this is going to be the way Cash's look on his face. I'm wondering if a heel turn's coming for the FTR, right? Because you have, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing something needs to happen with those guys, you know, probably after Final Battle, you know, to change them up a bit. But yeah, it was a really good main event, I thought.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought the finish made sense. Gunn Brothers were on camera, and they kind of teased the fans that, oh, you thought we were going to be involved in this somewhat. A lot of us did. I think that's the conclusion we came to last week.
I think, like we talked about, Tony loves the chatter on the internet, and a lot of people were saying like, oh yeah, the Gun Club must be involved in the finish. And then Austin Gunn saying that, like, oh, you all thought we were going to get involved in the finish, ha ha ha. And then the whole, like, why is FTR and the Briscoe brothers needs to be a double dog collar match makes no sense to me, because the first match, yes, was two great tag teams, you know, wanted to prove they're the best. They have this war of a match. They end the match in respect, right, to each other. They both, you know, they have a rematch, 2 out of 3 falls. Same thing happens. Respect again between these two teams. When is there two teams that respect each other lead to a double dog collar match, right? Like, makes no sense. It's just a hot shot. And
I know some people think that they're going to win. I can't imagine they're winning these titles if you can't put them on TV. Now, this could be some foreshadowing to maybe AEW does have something.
Yeah.
And then you can put the belts on them, and then they're with ROH full time. So that's kind of interesting. If they don't have a TV deal, and even if they do have a TV deal, like TNT or Warner execs have already said, that they don't want those guys on. So that's why I don't think that they're winning here. But so maybe you do have to stretch a third match with some sort of stipulation that, you know, that. But the other thing is that this is such a last minute thing, right? There's no, been no build to this third match. And it's just a add on so that, you know, hope, you know, this is a match of the year candidate. If you watch the other two matches,
trying to get some buys. Trying to get some last minute buys and stuff that people are, maybe they're on the fence of it. Maybe this is because their last two matches, you know, the two first two matches are really good, you know?
Yeah.
Still, that first match is my favorite match of the year so far in 2022. So, yeah, I just didn't like the booking of this. It's just really hot shot, you know, and like it doesn't make sense. I mean, and I really like the Gun Club, but I don't think I like him that much anymore because I saw Colton Gunn with that LA Dodgers hat, man.
Yeah, he might be dead to me then, too.
Yeah, yeah, I like those guys, but that Dodger hat, bro. I only like two Dodger fans. That's Matt De La Rosa and Ruby Reyes. That's the only people I like that are Dodger fans.
All right. So we're going to now send it to my interview with Chris Vanini from earlier today. John and I will be back next week to talk about Winter is Coming. All right, Chris Vanini is with us. He is a college football writer for The Athletic. He also does a podcast on the side, which is why he's here with us, called Getting Over, which is a wrestling podcast, which makes him a very intriguing person to me, covering sports at a national level and has a side interest in wrestling there. Chris, welcome.
Hey, happy to be here.
So the first question is, to me, I find it fascinating that you are doing, you're a national journalist for a giant publication and a wrestling person, because, and I'll tell you why I'm fascinated, which is back in the day when I was working for KMBR 680 in out here in the Bay Area, I did not necessarily make it that easy to for people to know that I was also a wrestling fan, but that was 25 years ago or whatever, right? So, like, do you, or is there still any issues with that? Like, do people kind of give you stuff for being a wrestling fan?
No, you know, I was a wrestling fan before I was a sports fan. I mean, I write about college football now, but, you know, when I was growing up, I just remember walking in one day. It was one of the In Your House pay-per-views in 97, Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, and just being like, whoa, what is this? And my dad happened to be watching it. And I just kind of got into it there. And at that point, the only sports I cared about were the Detroit Red Wings growing up in Detroit. But I didn't really watch ESPN or do any of that other stuff. So I, from 97 to 01 to the invasion, I was a wrestling guy. Like, that was my thing.
Right.
And then when I got into middle school, made some new friends who liked other sports, I kind of got into ESPN and football and all those other things. And stayed out of wrestling for like 10 years or so, and then got back in around CM Punk versus Rock, Raw 1000, that Royal Rumble. And ever since then, I've been kind of all in on it again. It just was kind of a decade away, came back, and it's really grown into such a huge thing where I write for The Athletic, I write about college football, but I can write about wrestling in different ways. I did a story about Roman Reigns when he played at Georgia Tech. I did a story about Bray Wyatt when he played at Troy in junior college. How do college football players become pro wrestlers? And now, right as WWE is making that push to get college athletes to be wrestlers, it's really turned into a great thing that mixes together. And there'll be football coaches who like wrestling. They'll text me something about it. Like, you know, like as you're kind of alluding to, it was kind of an, not underground, but like something people didn't express publicly for so long, but it's very much part of the mainstream now.
No. And it's great to hear that, that there is, because back in the day, college football was a giant pipeline for pro wrestling. Like, you look at, you know, back in the a lot of the guys who became stars in like the 80s, like, they had all gone to, I think it was at West Texas State or whatever, and yeah, played football. Yeah. And that kind of became a pipeline for wrestling there. So obviously we're going to bounce, you know, back and forth between college football and wrestling, because I just think it's so fascinating. But I'm also kind of interested in what the idea of media is today. And so I'll give a little bit of a background. The idea that you can be a surefire national journalist and also give your opinions on wrestling on the side. I subscribed to a website called Puck, and Puck is a journalism heavy website. They cover the entertainment business, Hollywood, politics, and they got covered by the New Yorker. And in the New Yorker piece, the idea behind the piece was journalists are now influencers, or journalists are now content creators. And there's like this weird gray area between journalism and going on YouTube and creating a page and going like, here's my take on X. Like, with this kind of the way that media works today, like, how do you kind of juggle, or how do you define what you do? And do you consider it like part of like this new media? Are you a little bit more old school in your journalism? Like, where do you stand there?
So back in 2009, I got onto this new thing called Twitter. And I was a student at Michigan State covering the football team, and a lot of the older writers on the beat thought this whole thing was ridiculous, make jokes about Twitter, tweet, whatever. And so I was one of the earlier people in kind of sports media who really got into it. At the time, I created the account for our student newspaper at the time and did that. And that has really led me to almost every job I have was Twitter, because I was able to promote my stuff. I was able to share opinions, news, whatever, on an account that other people noticed. I worked for a site called coachingsearch.com for 5 years that, if not for Twitter, people would not probably know what it is. That's what got it to the masses. So I've understood ever since I came out of college that you have to be able to sell yourself and sell your work and not solely rely upon your outlet to do that work for you, which is why the concerns about Twitter going away, I think, are very bad for people in the media. It gives us identity. It gives us the dopamine hits of a retweet. It gives you leverage. If you have 100,000 followers, that can help you get another job. That can help you in your contract negotiation if you're at your current place. So it gives people in the media some status a bit. And whether it's Twitter, whether it's another social media platform now that everybody's on, these things matter, especially for people in the media where, yeah, we are content creators. I'm not paid to tweet my thoughts on whatever different thing. I'm paid for my work that I write for The Athletic.
Sure.
But it helps to be able to have that.
Now, as a part of what you do for The Athletic, is social a part of it? Like, when The Athletic brings you on, do they say, we also want you to be good at social because it helps you get the reads? Now, the reason why I say that is the baseball winter meetings are going on, and John Heyman yesterday tweeted that the Giants were close to getting Aaron Judge, and then he immediately pulled back and said, whoops, I got bad information. But that is still out there today because Aaron Judge signed with the New York Yankees. So I would imagine the idea of using social in that way is pretty scary. Now, I don't know if that is, it doesn't seem like that's really your forte to kind of just break news on Twitter like it is for some like Adam Schefter or Adrian Wojnarowski. But is that also a part of what you bring to the table for what you do as a journalist?
When I joined The Athletic, I ran the college football Twitter account for the first 2 years, I want to say, because we were a staff of 50, 60 people. Our college football staff was 7 people. So there was nobody else to kind of run that. And because that was something I had done for so long, I was more than happy to do it. But it's not like in my contract or something that I have to do it. It's a lot of us journalists are very insecure people with fragile egos. And so we need the gratification of people seeing our stuff on social media. So that's part of it. And there is a news aspect to that. I mean, if you think about it, how much news does Adam Schefter break on Twitter and not ESPN?
Yeah.
It's always on Twitter. So, like, if Twitter went away, what does that do to Adam Schefter's value? I think it completely changes it. And right. also, Adam Schefter is on every TV show they have, so he does those kinds of things. But how would that change the value of him to the company? These are the kinds of things that social media does. These are the things that individual reporters are able to do that are not necessarily in the scope of their job or what's written into their contract.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk some pro wrestling. We'll go back. I have a couple other questions, especially around college football. But you kind of gave your story of becoming a wrestling fan and getting back into it. Now you and your podcast partner, Adam Silverstein, you guys have a podcast called Getting Over, and you cover, you know, the bigs, WWE, AEW. Where do you sit on where wrestling is today? Do you lean a little bit more towards WWE? Do you like what AEW is doing? Like, what is your focus when you're sitting at, because watching wrestling is watching a lot of content these days.
Yeah, you know, I typically, it depends. In football season, it's tough because I'm so busy. I'm watching Raw, I'm watching SmackDown because I have to do the podcast. I try to catch AEW as much as I can. In the offseason, I'm watching them both every week, you know, kind of just when I have more time. And it's been interesting. You know, Adam does the AEW NXT shows on his own on Thursdays. I do the WWE recap shows on Mondays where we talk SmackDown and Raw. And we started the show, or he started the show, in early 2020. And I came aboard a couple episodes in, and that happened to be right when the pandemic hit, you know, so it was almost the worst possible time to start something like that. And so I do it once a week. He does it twice. I'm always watching Raw. I'm typically not watching SmackDown live because it's Friday night and I'm either working or doing something, and I'll catch it on Thursday on the review or something like that. But it really is between the four shows, Dynamite, Rampage, Raw, SmackDown. They are four completely different shows.
Yeah.
Honestly, it feels like Raw and SmackDown are very different. The 3 hours versus 2 hours is different. Rampage is not very much different than Dark these days. So it's definitely a mix of things.
Interesting. So where wrestling is today, where really the TV money drives the industry, and AEW is kind of, you know, immediate rise and then a little bit of a plateau that we're seeing right now. Do you think that AEW can ever, I don't want to say get to where WWE is, because WWE is at a place that is kind of ridiculous if you look back 10 years to see where they are. But do you think that we will have this sort of competition, these two companies on national TV, or do you think the industry will really survive with WWE?
No, I think both will continue to be around, and they need to both be around. You need options. You need competition. It's better for everybody. It's better for wrestlers' money. It's better for stories. It's better for everything. I mean, AEW, I live here in Dallas. They come over to Garland a couple times a year. I think I've been to almost every show they've done here. They'll be here next week, I think, for Winter is Coming. And it's a completely different show going to that than it is going to a WWE show in downtown Dallas. And that's good. It's good to have those different things. You know, the Turner, Warner Brothers, whatever they're calling themselves now, they seem to understand the value of live wrestling. And I know, and obviously, you know, Dave points out all the time, you can't just compare viewership now to viewership at a different time.
Right, right.
There's fewer viewers. It's where you rank on what you are. And AEW still remains one of the most watched things on cable in its time slot on Wednesdays. And that's good. That's really good. And Raw and SmackDown continue to as well. The more companies, the more broadcasters that are into wrestling, that's good for everybody. It helps AEW that WWE has fought so hard to become mainstream, to not just be the old wrestling type of thing. You know, the PG era, call it whatever. The 20 years or so that WWE has been working to become mainstream cultural, acceptable, mainstream culture acceptable, trickles down to everybody. And I think that's helped AEW as well. And that's good. I think they understand they all work together. Tony Khan's got a lot of money. So I don't think they're going away. They're going away anytime soon. And it seems pretty clear that Turner likes having them on.
One of the stories that you did, I think it's been a couple months now, was on the NFL and college football historically not competing against each other on television, and that there was this sort of contract that they would not. And now it seems like that's going to change. I know the NFL is going to do a Black Friday game next year. So you're pretty clued in to the TV stuff. Where do you see, what do you think is going to happen with this AEW television negotiation here, especially with, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery kind of pulling back on everything else?
Yeah, obviously Warner Brothers is cutting a lot. HBO, HLN, different channels that are kind of all under this big umbrella. It happens when you make mergers, and it sucks for a lot of people involved. But from my understanding, it's not like Turner's paying for the travel for AEW to go to different shows. That's still AEW doing that. So if Turner's basically just providing a time slot, then everything should be fine. I mean, like we said, we know they're one of the most watched things on that network, on TNT or TBS, whichever one it happens to be. And it's live. Like, live sports continue to be the most important thing on television. It's probably the only thing holding television up still together.
Yeah. I mean,
you look at the top 100 most viewed TV shows of 2021, and like 80 of them are NFL games.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like 10 of them are college games. The Olympics are in there, college basketball, like football especially, but live sports are incredibly valuable. And it's the only thing that keeps people coming back to live TV. So live wrestling provides that. That's why the WWE deal jumped so much previously and may jump again with the next deal, because it is one of the most viewed things that they have. If you have a live sports property right now, that is still going up and up and up, even as viewership TV homes go down. At some point, that's going to pop, but you know, these TV companies are trying to survive, and live sports are doing that.
Where do you stand with how Triple H has done when it comes to taking over creative? There's one side who's like super jazzed that Triple H has brought a lot of people back, and there's another side, and I probably sit a little closer on this side, which is like, he's doing a babyface version of Vince, where it's a lot of similar stuff, but he's not doing a lot of the negative things that Vince would do. Where do you, like, how would you grade Triple H so far since he took over creative?
Look, the floor for him to make improvements was pretty low. doing things like saying wrestling, like pointing out other companies existing, so many of those restrictions that Vince had, simply taking those away just made everything feel a lot fresher.
Yeah, I call it the control. What is it? Control Z on the keyboard. Let's just back. Let's just reverse that thing.
Yeah, Michael Cole has been a lot more enjoyable on commentary, and I think probably because he doesn't have Vince screaming in his ear all the time. So the floor has gotten better. None of it feels terrible. Like we do a segment on the podcast. We call it the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Outside of the main topics, you know, was it good? Was it bad? What'd you think? And during the Vince, you know, since from when we started the podcast, there'd be a lot of good, bads and uglies on segments that felt like they were wasting your time, that felt like they were insulting your intelligence as a viewer a little bit. And ever since Triple H took over, there's very few of those. Like the floor of what's acceptable on wrestling now is a lot higher. Not everything's great, not everything's good, but nothing feels really bad anymore. So that's been a step forward. There are some issues. I've had a lot of issues with the women's booking since he took over, either lack of matches or lack of imagination in the storylines. Bianca Belair continues to just kind of do nothing for the last several months.
Yeah.
You know, like there is definitely a lot of room for improvement. If you wanted me to give a grade, I'd probably say B+ right now. Like it's solid, but there's work to be done still.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair, and really we probably won't know until we get more towards WrestleMania season about what his really grandiose ideas are, or even after WrestleMania season, because a lot of the things are kind of put into motion when he took over. So b- But going back to college football, if you ask journalists, you know, I know you have an alma mater that you root for, but your coverage of college football comes from an unbiased standpoint. And if you ask journalists, they just say, oh, you know, what I want to see happens is basically the story. I root for the story. And so I imagine that when Colorado brought Dion over, you guys were like overjoyed because there's so much content ready to be written about Dion Sanders taking over as head coach at Colorado.
We have talked more about Colorado football in the college football world over the last week than we have in the previous 10 years. Like, that's just what Dion's going to do. And he's going to – the Dion Sanders experience is that he's going to do a lot of things. He's going to say the quiet part out loud, and he's going to do it all on camera.
Yes.
And that's great for us. You can see his last meeting with the Jackson State team. You can see his first meeting with the Colorado team. And that's all entertaining and fun and good. The downside is – how is he going to be with media that's not produced by his son? You know, sure. His son is the one who does the social media for a lot of his stuff. He was before he was a college coach, he was a assistant at a high school here around the Dallas area, coaching his son, who was quarterback, a different son who was his quarterback. And I went to one of the games to try to talk to him afterward for a story. And he wouldn't talk to me. He would only talk to a documentary crew that was following him around. And that's basically how it's been ever since. He's got a documentary just kind of going nonstop, apparently. So it's a mix of, it's going to be really entertaining. We're going to have a lot of things to talk about, and it's going to be fun. But it's also going to be, how much insight can we get that's not about him, that's not Dion approved, that type of thing. So like, from that media standpoint, how many one-on-ones with the local beat writer is he gonna do? Like, I don't know. He didn't, Jackson State was, he did whatever he wanted. So we'll see how it is at Colorado.
Yeah, and they have to be ecstatic. Like, because like you said, you haven't covered them very much. So now all of a sudden they're one of the dandies because of who's there. So I thought it was fascinating. I was like, wow, like just the amount of coverage this thing was getting, and then, you know, his statement talking about the transfer portal and stuff. It's just like, I can just imagine you guys going like, there's so many things that we're going to be able to write about.
Look, if I was a former NFL player with all the success he had, with all the money he had, with all the money he had doing media stuff, I wouldn't go back to putting in the grind of being a college football coach. Like, that is a hard job. Like, you got to really be committed to doing that. And so that's why, like, this isn't like a show. Like, he's not doing this, you know, just to do it. Like, he puts in the work. He's a very organized guy. He has a plan of what he wants to do. And to go, to have been through everything he's been through and still want to be a college football coach is a testament to actually, you know, really wanting to do this and putting in the effort to do this. So he deserves credit for that.
So Andy Bowen says, I think he spends 2 or 3 years at Colorado. If he is successful, I see him going to the NFL or a bigger program. But if the program stays bad, I see him moving on. Do you have any thoughts on that?
If he has success at Colorado, everybody's going to want to hire him. NFL, college, wherever. I mean, the fact that he's at Colorado right now is because nobody else wanted to hire him yet. The fact that he was at Jackson State before that was the fact that nobody wanted to hire him to be a head coach at that
right.
point. He's kind of had to prove himself along the way to get people to believe in what he's doing as a coach. And if he has Colorado winning 10 games in year two, SEC teams are going to come calling. Big Ten teams are going to come calling. Everybody's going to come calling. The NFL is going to come after that. Where does he ultimately want to go? I don't know. He probably at least wants to see through his son's college career. He's been with him for a few years. He's coming with him to Colorado. So he probably wants to see that out. If it goes badly, I don't know. I have no idea where things go. He's got a pretty long contract. I don't know. He's probably going to have a pretty long leash. I don't even know what the actual – I'm trying to just imagine the concept of being like, all right, we got to fire Dion Sanders as our head coach. Like, how's that going to go over? I don't even know. But if it goes poorly and his son is no longer there with him playing, does he decide to stop doing it? Maybe. I don't know.
I imagine you're saving your prediction for the college national champion for a future piece or so. But
no, I can tell you. I can tell you it's Georgia. I'm picking Georgia. Okay.
Yeah. I mean that's what I was going to assume.
Yeah.
But somebody who I've been fascinated by, Jim Harbaugh, because I'm in the Bay Area, got to see him be the head coach at Stanford, then to come over to the 49ers, and then he kind of gets run out of town by the ownership and the GM, and he lands at his alma mater, and I think there was, you know, there was some expectation that he was going to do the exact same thing at Michigan that he did in San Francisco, which is like immediately turn everything around to become one of the best programs. And they've been great, but it seems finally now they're at that stage where you're like, okay, this is what he was expected to do. They're competing for a national championship. How close have you covered Harbaugh, and what do you think about him in what he's done?
I've not covered him all that closely. I'm not in Michigan. I grew up in Michigan, but I'm not there anymore. I moved down here early into his tenure. He's a unique guy, and he's a lot like Dion, honestly, in that, like, sometimes if he just has a feeling, if he feels strongly about something, he's just going to come out and tell you about it.
Yeah.
Like he came out pretty openly in this recent election cycle about like abortion rights in Michigan. Like no college coach is going to usually try to touch that stuff. It's just what he does. And so he turned around Michigan very quickly. I mean, they almost made the playoff in his second year, I think, taking over a program that had really fallen apart. They just couldn't get over Ohio State. They couldn't get over that hump. And then the 2020 season happens. I think they go 2-4. The Ohio State game gets canceled because of COVID. And that some people wanted him gone. It felt like that might be the end of his tenure, that he'd worn out his welcome, that he hadn't quite gotten to where he wanted to go. He could win, but he couldn't beat Ohio State, and he struggled against Michigan State. He couldn't win the Big Ten. He completely overhauls his staff, and then last year's team just makes it. They finally get over the hump. They beat Ohio State. They go to the playoff. They finally get to where people thought he was going to be. They lose some players, some key players. They come back this year, and now maybe even better now. They're undefeated going into the playoff now. So he's gotten Michigan finally to the place that everybody thought they could be, thought they should be, and he did it his way. You know, he stuck to what he wanted to do. He made the changes he wanted to make, but he got him there.
And I'm actually surprised he lasted this long, because it seems like he's not the guy to stay for a long time. He's there to stay for, you know, a really good time, but maybe not the longest time. But I give him a lot of credit, because I'm always rooting for him, just because I saw what he did with the 49ers and kind of how he got railroaded out of here. Okay.
Well, he wanted the Vikings job last year. Like he did a whole day-long interview. He tried to take the job. The Vikings ended up not hiring him. So he said he's committed to staying in Michigan. You can be sure NFL teams are at least going to see if that's accurate, especially the Colts, where he used to play. I don't know what's going to do. Nobody ever really knows what Jim Harbaugh is going to do, but you're going to hear his name a lot kicked around NFL coaching cycle. Whether he does something, we don't know.
All right. Last college football coach, and we'll bring it back to your podcast here. I have, this is a little bit of a selfish question here. My San Jose State Spartans, they're in a bowl, the Idaho Potato Bowl. It's one of the first ones. It's like December 20th. It's like in a couple weeks here, against Eastern Michigan. They're favored by between, I don't know, 3.5 and 4.5 points. I can't imagine you've watched any San Jose State games necessarily, but just give me a little bit of good feeling here. Are my Spartans going to win this game?
They've had a very good season. I mean, I watched them 2 years ago when they won the Mountain West.
Yeah.
You know, they had that big season out of nowhere to win the conference. That was very cool. I haven't caught much this year just because there's so many things to kind of catch, and they weren't in the conference title race. But, you know, they loaded up on transfers after last season, and it's really worked for them. Eastern Michigan, close to where I grew up, a similar program that has just kind of been – was just so bad for so long, then finally got the right coach to fix things. That's Brent Brennan at San Jose State. That's Chris Creighton at Eastern Michigan. I think these are two of the best coaches, most underrated coaches in college football going into this game. The fact that where the location is, where San Jose has played before, Eastern Michigan, you know, Midwest teams going out west typically doesn't work out. So I think I'm probably picking San Jose State to win this one.
I like it. I like it. Okay, let's get back to getting over. What do you guys do? What do you and Adam do that you kids? You know, there's so many wrestling podcasts out here. Thankfully, I get to do one on the Wrestling Observer Figure Four site. So, you know, that there's a little bit of status there. But for you guys, like, to just create a podcast, to get it out there, I know Adam specifically really cares about those five-star reviews, and he makes it a focus to get over the hump with that. And that's fantastic, because that's how, you know, that's how you're messing with the algorithms and such. But like, what separates you guys from the other podcasts, you think?
Well, I just think we go pretty in depth talking about every single thing that happens on the show. Our Monday show is the SmackDown Raw, you know, recap analysis. So we'll talk about the big stories. We'll talk about the Bloodline. We'll go 30 minutes, 45 minutes on the biggest stories of whatever's going on. But then we go through every single segment on the show, good, bad, or ugly, backstage promo, a low card feud, whatever Hit Row is doing, you know, even if it's like the bottom of SmackDown, like we're going to talk about that and share our thoughts on that. So I think what we take a lot of pride in is fully acknowledging and recognizing everything that goes on the show, not just the main things that will get talked about on typical wrestling podcasts elsewhere. So it's full top to bottom. Again, Adam also does the Thursday show with NXT and AEW. I'm sometimes on there, but we also do instant analysis for pay-per-views. We do big previews for the pay-per-views. We do a Twitter Spaces before the pay-per-views go on the air, which has been difficult on Saturdays because of college football. So I don't, I do not like that AEW and WWE doing their shows on Saturdays this fall has just wrecked both of us. Cause he does college football for CBS.
Right.
But yeah, it's mostly, you know, I like to think of it as kind of one of the most detailed pro wrestling podcasts around. And the fact that both of us come from journalism backgrounds, from storytelling backgrounds. I think that's kind of what makes our podcast what it is.
Being that you cover the shows so closely, do you have a favorite sort of guilty pleasure storyline or character that you're into right now where some people are just like, I'm not in. Like for me, the worst thing on WWE television for me is Dexter Lumis. I cannot stand what they're doing with him. Like, I'm not the biggest Miz guy. Like, I love Mike Mizanin from MTV and the, like, I love that guy, but I'm not the biggest Miz fan. But when Dexter Lumis is tied to Johnny Gargano and I'm rooting for the Miz, like, that tells you how much I dislike that storyline. But is there anything that you kind of get a kick out of that a lot of fans would be like, I don't know about that?
This is something Adam and I have clashed on before. I love LA Knight. I think he turns it into something good, and he hasn't done much on the main roster so far, but back when he was Eli Drake in TNA and doing other things, just like he talks like Stone Cold Steve Austin but with the Rock's
yes
cadence. It's like a mixture of the two. But he's such a good talker. Yeah, and like I'm somebody who likes the story and who thinks mic work is more important than wrestling ability. Sure. Also, you have to be able to wrestle. Like it's right. Like you can't be doing nothing out there. But like I'm much more into like a great promo than I am a great match on Dynamite or something like that. That's just me personally, how I am with it. So LA Knight, he did, you know, the model stuff, it was ridiculous. But like he made it work. The Maximum Male Models, Max Dupree, like it worked. It was funny. It was low card. It was nothing, but like it felt like it was worth my time to watch. And so he gets into this feud with Bray Wyatt. And the face-off that they did was one of the most entertaining things outside of the Bloodline that I think WWE had done. And we haven't really gone back to that. It's just been a lot of Bray promos, a lot of something happened backstage. I want to get those two back in the ring together because two completely different personalities, two different talkers. But I'm an LA Knight guy. Adam hated him in NXT until he turned face with like the 2.0 versus Black and Gold bit. And he's kind of come around since. But guilty pleasures in wrestling, I've been an LA Knight guy.
There you go. And he's going to have his work cut out for him because when they do eventually get to that Bray Wyatt match, I think there's going to be some bloom off the rose there for Bray Wyatt, and I just hope that he doesn't get the blame for that. So, yeah, good luck to both of them on that. Okay, so Getting Over Podcast, you can find these guys everywhere. Adam and Chris, you see the those watching on video, you can see the at Getting Over Cast is the Twitter handle for the podcast. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, just at Getting Overcast on Twitter. Everything's there. Adam does a lot of live tweeting of the shows on there. And also, if you're a fan of pretty much any sports team, hope you check out The Athletic. We've always got sales going on to buy subscription. And NFL season, NBA, NHL, college football, like, hope you check out The Athletic.
Everybody who knows me knows that I was a day one Athletic subscriber when you guys finally rolled out to the Bay Area. So I've been on ever since. The news feed with who you can follow and the teams and the authors so that you don't miss. Like, I follow Chris on there so I could see what the latest that he's written. Like on Jeff Brohm, who former 49er quarterback. I saw that piece today.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, The Athletic is great. Everybody who knows me knows that I live by The Athletic. So thanks, Chris. Thanks for hanging out with us. So for Chris, for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace.